It's time for Let's Talk with Brian Pettaway.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk and the very first Sunday of Black History Month. I am your host, Brian Pettaway, and I want to discuss Black History Month second because I walk around often and I hear us, black folks, talk about how we were shorted, how the government gave us the shortest month of the year and usually the coldest with the crappiest weather to celebrate Black History. And I can honestly understand why we would assume and come to the conclusion that white men in Congress, who never really wanted to recognize or acknowledge black contributions in American history, certainly not celebrate them, would choose February, the shortest and typically coldest month of the year, for that to happen. I mean, it's an easy assumption to make as a black person in this country based on the treatment that we had received up until that point. However, in this instance, that assumption would be incorrect. And you know, I don't mind us as black people being loud. I mean, I love us. What I don't like is when we're loud and wrong. So give me 3 minutes to kind of sum up how this came to be and to whom we should give the credit, you know, or the blame for Black History Month. Okay, Carter G. Woodson was an amazing black scholar who was born in 1875 to two illiterate black slaves. And though his parents were illiterate, as were a lot of black slaves back then who were still very smart, Carter's IQ was clearly at genius level. Carter's formal education back then, as you can imagine, was very sporadic. He had to work on the farm and he worked in the coal mines to help his father's meager income, right? But he was very, very hungry for education. And though his exposure to formal education was very limited, he took the basic principles that he learned while he was there and taught himself and mastered common school subjects by the age of 17. Now, he entered high school at 20 because he still had to work. So he entered high school late, but completed his diploma in just 2 years. He then left the farm after high school and enrolled to Maria College in Kentucky, where he obtained his bachelor's degree in literature. From that point, he traveled a little bit. He became a school supervisor in the Philippines and then later traveled throughout Europe and Asia. He came back to the States and got his master's degree from the University of Chicago and then became the second black American behind W.E.B. Du Bois to obtain a PhD from Harvard University, which was an amazing accomplishment at that time. And although at this point now he was a very well-educated man, he was still a well-educated black man that still had to endure a lot of racism and exclusion in this country. And one of the things that he was barred from attending, even though he was a dues-paying member, was the American Historical Association conferences, where there was no black representation. And Woodson believed that the white-dominated historical profession had little interest in black history. He saw African-American contributions overlooked, ignored, and even suppressed, not only by the writers who were there at this conference who wrote historical textbooks, but also by the teachers who used them. Dr. Woodson realized at that moment that for black scholars to study and preserve black history, he would have to create a separate institutional structure. And that was not an easy task in the early 1900s for a black man. You weren't going to get federal funding for that, and you certainly weren't going to get a bank loan for that. But with the help of a lot of philanthropists, white and black, he was able to get enough funding and founded the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History in 1915 in Chicago, describing the mission of that place as the scientific study of the neglected aspects of Negro life and history. His devotion to showcasing the contributions of black Americans bore fruit in 1926 when he, Dr. Woodson, launched Negro History Week in the second week of February, to coincide with the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. That concept of Negro History Week was expanded into Black History Month. Now, Carter Woodson died of a heart attack in 1950 at the age of 74. But during his lifetime, this son of two illiterate slaves published several books on black history. Popular books like The Miseducation of the Negro, The Education of the Negro Prior to 1861, and The History of the Negro Church. Carter G. Woodson was an extremely determined man and one that was incredibly proud of his race. So the next time we kind of bitch about Black History Month being in February, let us not make the mistake of blaming the white man. Instead, let's give credit to this amazing black man, Dr. Carter Godwin Woodson. He was a bad boy. Hey, but listen, I appreciate you indulging me your 3 minutes. It was a brief history lesson, but you know, an important one. But this is the very first Sunday of Black History Month, a month where I have a lot of great guests. And I'm going to start off today, talking to the legendary, and when I say legendary, I mean legendary, Miss Dionne Warwick. I'm going to sit down and talk to her. I've also got the Petty with me today. He's going to discuss the upcoming Super Bowl and the Super Bowl picks And I'm sure he's going to rub in how our Ravens broke my heart. He had already texted me during the game, calling him bum birds and all kinds of other stuff that I don't want to say on the radio. But I got to talk to him and face that music because his 49ers, you know, they progressed to the Super Bowl. It is what it is. So, yeah, we've got the petty. We've got Sunday fun facts, which I love. And, of course, right before all of that, we're going to have news and commentary. But I'm going to make it short. It's just been a couple of news stories this week. I got to get out. And then we'll on with the rest of the show. So I hope you're feeling great because I'm feeling great. I do have lots to talk about today. So let's get right to it. Now, as I mentioned earlier, in lieu of time, I'm going to limit the news today to just two stories. One local, one national. The one story that I cannot seem to get away from, the one that keeps my attention, is this Marilyn Mosby trial, because so much has come out of this trial. And if you have not been paying attention to it, you might want to start. She was on the witness stand on Thursday, being cross-examined by Assistant U.S. Attorney Aaron Zelinsky, and she was presented with mortgage documents she signed under penalty of perjury, where she failed to include a federal tax lien, and she promised she would not rent out her vacation homes in Florida, which apparently she did anyway. Marilyn Mosby continued to blame others. She blamed her former husband, Nick Mosby, for the tax debt problems, and he, when he was on the stand, admitted to lying to her about taking care of the debt. He said that she had no idea that they were in that kind of debt when she filled out her forms. And she also blamed her mortgage company repeatedly, saying that the inaccuracies on the mortgage documents that had been deemed to be fraudulent were not fraudulent because of anything that she had done, but because her mortgage company filled them out incorrectly. Now, here's the problem. When asked if it was her signature on the forms, she said yes. When asked if she read the forms, she said yes, and that she even noticed some mistakes on those forms. So the question that I have is, if she read the forms, which she said she did, if she signed the forms, which she said she did, if she noticed mistakes and inaccuracies on the forms, which she said she noticed, how much responsibility does she bear in filing those forms anyway? That's what the jury has to decide. Most of this, if not all of this, is going to depend on how well the defense painted her as a victim in this situation. Someone who was a novice real estate buyer, who knew nothing about what needs to be filled out on her mortgage forms, and someone who was the victim of her husband lying to her about their tax debt and allowed her to file tax forms that said they had no tax debt, when in fact they did. You know, the defense of Marilyn Mosby being a victim would be so much more believable if she weren't such an incredibly bright woman, meaning the position that she held in this city as former city state's attorney required her to be so detail-oriented about the law that it's going to be a hard pill for jurors to swallow that she just signed off on legal documents carelessly and recklessly. But we will see next week what the jurors think, because defense and the prosecution have rested their cases and their closing arguments will begin on Monday. So we will see what happens in this case, and I will keep you updated. I am riveted, and I am definitely going to keep you informed. The other story that grabbed my attention this week nationally was, of course, Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump reminds me a lot of J. Edgar Hoover. When J. Edgar Hoover was the director of the FBI for his almost 40 years, for 37 years, he wielded a lot of power. There were so many people that were afraid of him, and it was because he was said to have had a file on everyone of importance in this country, pretty much the world, that he had a file of their transgressions and their weaknesses. And so no one wanted to cross him. And that meant from the top to the bottom, from the president-elect all the way down to the lowest man on the totem pole, no one wanted to cross J. Edgar Hoover for fear of what it might do to their reputation, their livelihood, or their families. So he was the big bully on the block at that time that could do whatever he wanted without consequence. And for that reason, he was a very dangerous man. I'm starting to wonder if Donald Trump has those kinds of files himself on members of the Republican Party, because it seems as if they all at some point end up kissing the ring. I mean, we're talking about a man who has been found guilty in a court of law of sexually abusing a woman, right? And for the last 11 weeks, he's been embroiled in a major fraud case in which he is alleged to have lied about pretty much everything we know about his brand, how much it's worth, and how he has run his organizations and businesses. I mean, this guy, if he were filling out an application for a job at Walmart and he had to list the things that he had been found guilty of or alleged to have done, he wouldn't get hired. Yet, somehow, without ever having stepped on a debate stage this year, he's leading in the polls for the presidential nominee for the Republican Party. And the vast majority of Republican congressmen seem to be proud to have him. I mean, you've got people like Senator Tim Scott, who openly and embarrassingly interrupted Trump's speech at a rally simply to tell him that he loves him. No one seems to know what's going to happen. No one seems to know if this case is going to find Trump guilty, finally, and ineligible and unfit to run for president of the United States, or if he's going to be acquitted. But what we know is at this moment, even going through all of the things that he's gone through, having been found guilty of sexual assault, it has not affected him in the polls. In fact, his numbers are getting stronger. And as much as I like to not think about Donald Trump, the truth of the matter is that there is a very strong possibility that he could get the keys to the country again. And trust me, if that happens, if he is elected president of the United States, knowing that this is his last opportunity to have this kind of power, he is going to be far more destructive than he's ever been. And that is a very scary thought. It's enough to keep you up at night. All right, I'll be back with Sunday Fun Facts right after this.
Hey Baltimore, make sure you don't miss the Christopher Williams Lovebird pre-Valentine's Day catered dinner and concert. This would definitely be the hottest show of the Valentine's Day season, featuring a live full concert by Christopher Williams, straight from New Jack City. This very intimate show will take place at Martin's West Grand Ballroom on Sunday, February 11th at 5 p.m. with special guest Shay and music by DJ Jazz. Doors open at 3:30 p.m. and tickets are selling fast, so get yours now. For full menu and details, call 410-215-8893. This is a Shawnee Merriman promotion.
Alright, we are back and it is time for Sunday Fun Facts, and I've got three pretty good ones for you today. So get out your pencil and pen or your recording device, jot this stuff down, because you're going to want to use them at a party, I promise you. Alright, fun fact number one. 90% of U.S. money has cocaine on it. Okay, I'll say it again. 90% of U.S. money has cocaine on it, either from exposure or drug use. A study revealed that 90% of the dollars circulating in the economy in the United States has cocaine on it. Traces of cocaine were found reaching 0.006 micrograms, several thousand times smaller than salt. The green dye on dollar bills causes cocaine residue to stick to those bills. Huh. I will say that this one ranks pretty high, no pun intended, on my fun facts list. 90%? That's a high percentage. All right, fun fact number two. A man once wore 60 shirts and 9 pairs of jeans to the airport to avoid extra fees. In a flight from China to Africa, a man wore 60 shirts and 9 pairs of jeans because he did not want to pay for extra baggage. He wore it throughout an 11 and a half hour flight. I'll pay the extra fees. And fun fact number three. Now, I wasn't sure that this was actually a fact, but I looked it up and it's actually a fact. The CDC website has a zombie preparedness section. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention contain and monitor epidemics. However, you'd be surprised that their websites have sections devoted to preparing exclusively for the zombie apocalypse. I wonder what they know that they're not telling us. You know what I mean? All right, those were your three Sunday fun facts. I hope that you enjoyed them, but now it is time to get on with the business of my guest today. Sometimes you meet people and you just get geeked out about them. You know what I mean? I'm not often starstruck. I've been around a lot of people who would be considered stars or celebrities in my lifetime or important people. But in my lifetime, I have run across two people that no matter how many times I saw them or have spoken to them, I always walked away from them feeling like I had been in the presence of greatness. One of those persons was Colin Powell, may he rest in peace, and the other is the lady that I'm going to speak to today, Miss Dionne Warwick. Now, this is not my first time speaking to Miss Dionne. In fact, I've spoken to her several times. I've met her a couple of times in person. But it doesn't matter because I always feel like a little kid when I'm around her. Not because of anything that she does or says. Like I said, she's a very nice, humble, gracious woman. But the aura and the energy that surrounds her is one of regalness, which automatically makes me go into respect mode. And when I walk away from her or hang up the phone from her, I notice that I'm standing up straighter. Like, it's a crazy thing. Miss Dion has been a legend in this industry of music for over 5.5 decades. She sold over 100 million records worldwide. She's got 6 Grammys. She's been inducted into the Hollywood Walk of Fame, the Grammy Hall of Fame, the National Rhythm and Blues Hall of Fame, and the Apollo Theater Walk of Fame. She has been a strong advocate and activist for AIDS research. When the disease was still deadly and new and no one was talking about it, Miss Dion was talking about it and singing about it and got a group of friends together, Elton John, Stevie Wonder, and Gladys Knight, and herself, and wrote a song called That's What Friends Are For. She donated all of the proceeds and royalties over the years from that song, which generated, by the way, millions of dollars to AIDS research. She donated her time and her talent as one of the few soloists on the record We Are the World, which generated millions of dollars to help feed the hungry in Africa. So yes, in addition to being an incredibly talented songstress over many years, she's also been very generous with her time, and she's doing it again today by sitting down with me. Okay, 1500 family, please help me welcome to Let's Talk, and I can't believe I'm saying it, but the incomparable, amazing, and legendary Miss Dion Warwick. Miss Dion, how are you feeling today?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
Well, I'm going to make it through this. I'm not often starstruck, but you know how it is. I'm doing okay. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. I've seen you on J-Hud and Kelly Clarkson and Chris Wallace, which was a incredible interview recently. What was it like being on CNN and talking to Chris Wallace? I mean, he just, first of all, he couldn't stop smiling. Like, he was gushing the whole time.
Yes, well, I met him years and years ago, and it's the first time I literally have seen him in that length of time. So between takes, I mean, we kind of caught up on each other. So
okay. So you had already had a relationship before that interview.
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. Can you tell me about, because, you know, you've been doing this a long time. Can you tell me about the gospel?
The Gospel Heirs. Well, it consisted of my sister and 2 members of our choir, and that was the Gospel Heirs. We were kind of almost preordained to create a gospel group, coming from a gospel singing family and a renowned gospel group. So that's what the Gospel Heirs meant and means to me now.
Did you have any issues transitioning from gospel music to, like, secular music back?
Oh, yeah, I got backlash. You know, people going to talk anyway. But my grandfather, who was a minister, he sat me down one day. He said, you know, we went through the change of your name. We went through that issue together. And we're going to get through this one too together, he said to me. I said, well, Grandpa, I don't understand what's going on. He said, well, what I want you to do is understand you are earning an honest living.
Right, right.
And you still attend services at the church. So, you know, people don't run their mouths. So there's nothing in their mouths, and you run your business. I said, you know what, Grandpa, you are absolutely right. And as far as that's concerned, music is music.
Yeah.
I don't care what genre that you decide that you want to listen to, but we all use the same 8 notes.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's amazing that it's 8 notes, you know, and so much has been done with those 8 notes.
Yes, it has. You know, well, chromatically it's 13 notes, but generally a normal scale is 8 notes.
Wow. Now, look, you've been through quite a bit as a black female artist in this country. Mm-hmm. And you've seen so much change in the music industry. When you first heard yourself on the radio, do you remember what year that was and what you were doing when you first heard it?
I sure do. it was the beginning of 1963.
Okay.
And Don't Make Me Over was my first recording.
Okay.
And Frankie Crocker played it as I was driving home from the airport. And yes, I did pull over. And yes, I did roll all my windows down so everybody could hear. It was a very proud moment.
Wow. Were you by yourself?
Yes, I was, unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
I just dropped off friends at the airport.
1963. You know what? That was a crazy time for us. I mean, you toured with Sam Cooke, who was one of my favorite singers.
Yes.
But you toured with him and a few other black artists through the South during segregation. Were you aware of the danger? Were you aware of how dangerous that was at that time?
Not at all. You know, I had really no experience or any sense of what the South really was.
Oh, wow.
And it was my very first tour, and it was Sam Cooke headlining. And, it was quite an education, of which, I found their way of living during that period of time, and some places still today.
Right.
As being one of the most stupid things anyone wants to do.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and I don't use that word stupid a lot, but when it suits me, I have to say when it suits this.
You wear it.
There you go.
Did you run into any real problems where that danger presented itself?
There were a couple of times when we didn't know first of all if the bus was going to make it. Sometimes the guys had to get out and push that girl.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. But, primarily, no, it was really never anything that I felt in danger for.
Okay. All right. You, a lot of people don't know, you kind of have a relationship with Baltimore. You have a tie to Baltimore.
Yeah, I do.
What does that relationship tell us?
Well, that's where my husband, unfortunately, was deceased, was born and raised.
Right. Now, did you spend a lot of time here, or?
No, I did not.
You did not?
No. No, and I had a lot of friends in Baltimore, but BMO is not my place.
Did you perform here?
Oh, yeah, several times.
Do you remember the Royal Theater?
That's one of the theaters we all performed in.
Okay. My grandparents used to tell me about the Royal Theater and how amazing it was, and
uh-huh.
All of the stars that used to come through. So you did perform there.
Absolutely.
That is awesome. Wow. The other story that I've heard is that you rounded up some rappers to scold them about their language. Is that a true story?
It wasn't about scolding them. It was about finding a reason for them having to write words of that nature when it could be done palatably. Give me some that I can listen to without squinting or jerking.
Right.
They don't think that you have the right to call me out of my name. You don't even know my name.
Wow. I saw an interview with Snoop, and he said that he was one of those rappers. I think it was Snoop and Tupac and a couple of others.
Yeah.
But he said he was actually scared.
And I wanted to put them all at ease, too. Let me know, I'm a humanist, y'all are. And so funny how I didn't realize that he even said about gangsters.
He did say you were pretty gangster.
but I had to let them know that side of me as well,
Right. Right. What was it, the language that bothered you the most, or was it how the language directed
to
people?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Both the language and the vernaculars that they were using in describing, especially our young little girls.
Right.
How many of these young ladies have you seen walking on four legs with a tail?
Right, right, right. So you shouldn't be calling them that.
Call her that, right.
What about the use of the N-word? Does that bother you a lot in rap or in songs?
Yes, it does.
It does.
I find it quite degrading.
Yeah, I mean...
The degradation comes from the fact of how it was literally used. And they're going to use that word?
Yeah, I wondered about that because of the time in which you did your tours. And during segregation, the word was directed at us so much. And now you hear it in music, and it's used
coming from our own.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, which does not make sense at all.
Yeah.
Well, how are you going to decorate yourself?
Well, we do it every day, unfortunately.
I know. Something can should be done.
Right. So, how does it feel? You sold over 100 million records worldwide. You've been awarded, or you've won 6 Grammys.
Yes.
Inducted to the Hollywood Walk of Fame and several others. But I think I heard you mention that what you did for AIDS research was one of your biggest accomplishments.
One of them, yes. Absolutely right. You know, I feel that if I did more, nothing more than what I set out to do, educate people about what we're up against and fighting, and somebody has let people know.
Right. Right.
So, you know, and I'm nosy enough to want to know myself.
President Reagan at the time was having a hard time with AIDS. I don't think he wanted to recognize it at all.
No, it had nothing to do with him recognizing the what was going on. He had a problem saying it.
Why do you think that is, though?
What? I don't have a clue, but I got him to say it.
You got him to say it. How'd you do that?
I just had him explain what it was that he had appointed me the ambassador of health, and I said, why? What was you appointing me? What was I doing? What disease was I working on? He had no choice.
Now, did he said that on air? He said that.
Oh yeah.
I have to look that up. You've sung with a ton of people in your time.
Yeah.
But there are two people in particular that a lot of us are curious about what your relationship was like with them, and one obviously was Luther Vandross.
That's my child. I love him.
Yeah.
And so do. You know, Liz and I were very good friends. And there wasn't a day that went by that I did not hear his voice on my telephone.
Really?
That's right. Every single day.
Oh, wow. Okay. Did he call you and ask permission to remake House Is Not a Home? Or did...
No reason to.
Right.
Once it's recorded, it's fair game.
Okay.
And but I must tell you, it was, I loved Luther's voice, and I loved him. He's just a major friend, true friend.
Right.
And he called me after he had recorded House Not Home.
Okay.
And said, I want to play something for you. I said, oh, okay. And now my record company hasn't heard it. Nobody's heard it. Just you're going to be the first person aside from me that knows the song. And he played House on Home for me. And I said, Liz, I'm going to call you back in 10 minutes, okay? I called back and I called Hal Reagan.
Okay.
I said, I want you both to know I have just heard the definitive version of House is Not a Home.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. Luther made that song his own.
Wow.
You know, that song belongs to him.
You recorded it in what, 64, 1964?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And you didn't, because I saw you on video, he was singing it at some award ceremony, maybe it was the Grammys, and they kept panning to you, and you just seemed so proud of him when he was doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
The other person that a lot of people are curious about is Whitney Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And your relationship as family. Did you know when she was a little girl she had the goods? Did you?
Oh, she was just a normal little girl.
Really?
You know, a little tomboy, that's what she was. No, but you know, there's an old saying, the apple doesn't fall that far from the tree.
Right.
And that's exactly what Nippy was born into, this particular family of singers. So
okay.
It was, again, once again, preordained.
Right. Right, right. What? And there's still a family of singers. Like your son plays the drums, he sings. Your granddaughter, Cheyenne, she sings. It just doesn't seem to stop. It's the gift that keeps on giving. You know what I mean?
The legacy and the genes. That's what it is.
When I came to see you in New York, I didn't know that your son sang the way he sings. And he had a cold at the time, he said.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, I was blown away at how good he is.
Yeah.
Has he done anything? Has he recorded anything on his own?
No, he's unfortunately had two deals that he'd be letting him sign the labels that those that signed him were fired. So he lost the deals.
Oh, wow.
But you know, he's doing what he wants to do, and he's happy.
Yeah,
well, and he's starting to write again, which is wonderful.
Okay. Well, he can definitely sing, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And your granddaughter Cheyenne, is she singing country music right now? Is that her genre?
No, she's still finding who she is.
Okay.
So, you know, there's no particular genre of music yet.
Okay. You've got a movie coming up, a biopic. Teyana Taylor has been cast to portray you in this movie. Have you met her yet?
Oh, yeah. It's my alter ego. It's amazing. Every time I see her, it's like, oh, my God, look at me.
Takes you back. Now, has she picked up on your mannerisms and your speech cadence and all of this stuff?
She will.
Really?
Huh?
How much are you contributing to the actual production of the movie?
I'm not that much involved. I'll be consulting. That's about it.
Really?
Yeah. Why am I going to get in her way?
Okay. I know that Jamie Foxx, when he was portraying Ray Charles,
mm-hmm.
He said that he studied him for over a year. And he picked up on everything. And I just kind of wonder what that's like to have somebody studying you and trying to mimic what you do and how you did it and how you looked and how it's not a little weird? Doesn't feel funny?
Well, if you look at it from just a point of view, it might seem that way, but you're looking at someone portraying me.
Right.
And have no choice but to try to mimic as much as I possibly can without looking foolish.
Right. Did you have any part in the selection of Teyana Taylor, or was that just presented to you?
Actually, my son, Damon.
Okay.
Wrote that to me.
Oh, really?
He said, I want you to see this photo thing I just put together. And yet Teyana Taylor on one side and me in my younger years on another side. And I defied to say which one was which.
Wow.
Amazing.
It is amazing. I can't wait. I can't wait to see it. I really, really can't. Now, the last time I saw you was at the Kennedy Center Honors. And I got to be honest, I kind of got choked up when they did when your portion. I think you let off. I think you were the first person.
First up. Uh-huh.
Right. What did that feel like for you? Because it's been a long time coming. Like, I don't understand, but it's been a long time. Right.
You know, when Robert called and said, well, finally, I said, finally what? We are giving you the Kennedy Honor. I said, oh, really? What's taking so damn long?
Exactly.
Exactly. You know, I said, golly, aren't you excited? I said, no. I'm not that excited. Yeah, it should have happened a long time ago. So
I know that Queen Latifah had a lot of really nice things to say about you. She's like me. She said she was starstruck by you, and a lot of people.
Well, it's so funny because Dana, I've known her for years. Her mother and I were very good friends.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
So, you know, and I watched the growth in Dana. I still call her Dana. I call her Queen as he.
Right.
You know, which is wonderful for her, but I know her as Dana.
Yeah, and she's.
So watching her grow the way she has, I am so thrilled. And her mom's up there looking down, smiling up the way.
Yes, ma'am. I'm absolutely positive. About that, absolutely sure. When you see young artists now today making the kind of money that they make, you know, like Beyonce and, you know, Jay-Z, they're like billionaires. When you see the kind of money in the business now, do you feel any sense of, I don't want to say envy, but do you feel like you guys should have gotten more?
You know, I have a saying about, I'm glad you asked that question, because my gut feeling tells me all the time, everybody has the capacity of earning.
Okay.
And these babies have earned it.
Okay.
You know, they sell more records than they're supposed to. They got more money than they're supposed to have. But they earned it.
Okay.
And it's not for me to go in their pocket. I can't do that.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And I happen to be very proud of Beyonce. I met that little girl when she was 16 years old.
Really?
Yeah, my son Damon created the tracks for Destiny's Child.
Okay. All right.
So, you know, I've known her since she was a baby, as far as I'm concerned.
Who don't you know? And that's what I mean. Like, you know everybody, and everybody thinks they know you. And it's funny because when people are around you, it's this thing that you have that just makes them sit straight. I don't know how to describe it, but it's so funny. But it sounds like you. Well, number one, you traveled the world. Do you remember the first time you left the country? What was that like?
Yeah, it was amazing. My first trip was to London.
Okay.
And did live television over there and did a tour with the one with the Beatles and one with the Searchers.
Okay.
And
how did they receive you in London? How were you received there?
Oh, they fell in love with me, which is wonderful.
Interesting.
And it's still not.
And that wasn't segregated in London at that time, like it was here, correct?
No.
So anybody could sit anywhere.
They have problems, but, you know, no. There's nothing as federal as that we know here.
Okay. Well, have you been back many, many times? You ever thought about living abroad?
No.
No?
I have lived abroad.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, I was in Brazil for almost 20 years.
Okay, but not Europe, not Italy or France or London, like Tina did or anything like that?
Never had desire to live there.
Okay.
You know, I like visiting them.
What?
I've done concerts, but that's about it. Not to live.
Why Brazil?
Oh, my, why not Brazil? Oh, wow. I started touring Brazil in the 1964.
Okay.
It was my first trip there. And I fell in love with that country. It was so pleasant. And it was a case of, you know, people actually said hello to you in a minute.
Oh, wow.
You know? It was like, oh, wow. And I felt, while living there, this is what I grew up knowing.
Right.
And all of a sudden it just disappeared. And here I found it again. You know, you see elderly people walking down the street holding hands. And, you know, their priority happens to be their children.
Right.
And it's a family day. I mean, grandparents and babies on up. All are in the mall shopping together. It's amazing.
Wow.
It really is. I love it there. I really do.
You're still touring.
Mm-hmm.
And doing shows. Do you ever get tired of doing it? Do you ever feel like, you know what, I want to shut this down?
Never shut it down. But I know I'm slowing it down. But yes, I'm doing that.
Okay. Okay.
You know, it's time to do that.
I understand. I understand. You ever think, because you're out of New Jersey and Brazil. Is that how that works? You're the one place or the other? Okay.
Yes.
All right. You still have a lot of family in Jersey?
No, unfortunately.
No?
Okay.
No. Wow. Well, I got to tell you, I mean, I'm thrilled. I'm so thankful that you took the time with me today. I mean, I really, 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 really am.
No, it's my pleasure. I'm sorry it took so long.
No, it's okay. You're busy.
My bad.
Yeah, I mean, you're touring. You're doing all this stuff. So I was like, you know, eventually it'll happen. But I just can't believe that you're still doing all the things that you're doing. I see you all over the place. Saturday. Mm-hmm. What? Let me ask you this. What's up with Saturday Night Live? I saw you on Saturday Night Live. It was hilarious. How did you?
It was so much fun. They invited me since, was portraying me in this fictitious show of hers.
Right.
And they called me and asked me what I think about coming on, just to surprise her. And I said, sure, I'd love to.
Oh, she didn't know.
No.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So then her reaction was genuine then, huh?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. A prankster too. Okay. Well, all right, Ms. Dionne Warwick. I appreciate you so much. I really, really do for doing this. And I'm going to try and jump up to Jersey and check you out when you get there. And we'll talk soon.
Okay, you got
to deal. All right. Take care of yourself now.
I will, though. You too.
All right, babe. Bye-bye. All right, that was Ms. Dionne Warwick, and I'm let the cat out of the bag. This is not my first time speaking with her. I've met her on a few occasions. I have talked to her on the phone a few times, and I have a relationship with her, right? But every time I've spoken to her, every time that I have seen her, I still feel like it's the first time. I still get overwhelmed with reverence for her. I mean, she's just done so much for such a long period of time. And she's established herself in this business and has garnered so much respect from so many people, and rightfully so. All right, that was Ms. Dionne Warwick. I can't believe I had an opportunity to sit down and speak with her, that she gave me that time. I love her so much for it. I just love talking to her. You know what I mean? There's some people you just talk to, and every time they speak, you listen because you learn something. You know what I mean? She just brings so much class and dignity to this business of music and media, and I just love her for it so much. But anyway, now that I've spoken to royalty, I want to get the petty on the line. I know you hear the music, and that can only mean one thing on the show, and that is, it is time for the petty. So let's change gears and get him on the line.
Good morning, Brother B.
It is the petty. Good morning, sir. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. First, I want to say, that interview, fire. Fantastic, the legendary one. Oh my goodness,
unbelievable, right?
I don't know how you pulled it off, but man, you do what you do, and I congratulate you for that.
Hey, I just love talking to her. I'm just so happy that she was willing to come on to the show. You know what I mean? I mean, it's Black History Month. It was great to have some true Black history on the show.
Definitely, especially, you know, the music is my thing. I'm just so happy that you was able to pull that interview off. And it was just fantastic.
Appreciate
it. So I'm going to give you your props for that.
Thank you.
Now, you know you did not want to make this call this morning. So let me get started by saying, you may not recall, but I said to you several weeks ago, whoever laughs the loudest, and the hardest, that's me. Those bum birds have
whatever,
done it,
man.
Again.
Whatever,
and
man.
I told you, you know what? That's why I will never wear the purple and gold, purple and black, whatever color that those bum birds wear, I
look,
won't wear.
Man,
because
look.
They do what they do best. I call them angry birds because they get the fans of Baltimore angry.
No, we're not angry, man. They had a great season. They still had the best season in football.
I don't want to hear about a great season. You had it all. The number one seed in your house. You was playing well. Everyone picked Lamar Jackson and those bumbird Baltimore Ravens. Got right here, put them in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Everybody's talking about, even me. I talked about mailing the Lombardi Trophy to M&T Bank Stadium.
Yeah, you
guess
did.
Guess what?
You did.
We were all fooled. Bamboozled, led astray.
But it wasn't. It wasn't Lamar. It was Munchkin. Is that his name? It was his play calling. It was his play calling.
I don't care who it was. It was the Baltimore Ravens. cut and dry. I don't care if it was Moncton. I don't care if it was Harbaugh. I didn't care if it was Lamar. It was the Ravens.
All right,
and
whatever.
They do what they do.
Moving along.
Yes.
Moving along.
No. But I'm going to have this moment. And you knew it was coming. You knew it was coming. You knew when the final score was 17-10, you were thinking to yourself, oh, my goodness, I got to call that guy.
I mean, you'd already texted me, so I knew what to expect.
But this was even, you know what? And your response was, and you know what your response was, so I left it alone. And I was saving it all for today.
All right, whatever. But let me ask you a question. Why is it that the Orioles can go over 100 games and have the best season in baseball and then lose the first game of the playoffs? And it's okay for them. But we go deep into the playoffs, to the AFC Championship and lose, and we're bums.
You know why? Because no one, look, the Orioles came from out of nowhere. But the Ravens, how many times have we seen the Ravens do this? This is what they do. They pump you up. You know what? They're almost equivalent, and I hate to even say this. I hate to put this out here. They're almost equal, because I don't really feel this way. But it looks like the Ravens are the East Coast Cowboys.
No.
Like I said, I really don't even want to put them out there like that, Brother B. But you know what? Every year, the Cowboys, they come out, they look good. They're blowing teams out. They got all that talent. And then when it comes down to the playoffs, they let the fans of Dallas down. And that's just what happened in Baltimore. And I'm going to tell you, I was right. And see, I was riding with them. I was. I wanted the Ravens to get there. I was pulling for them. You know, I'm from Baltimore. It's like, you know what? It'd be good to see my home team, hometown team, get there. And I don't even know. Why did I let them pull the wool over my eyes again?
Little man, I don't understand, again, why you give the Birds, the Orioles, a pass, but you won't give the Ravens a pass.
Because, like I said, the Orioles have something to build on now. It's like, okay, you know, we've been there. We got, you know, booted out in the first round.
What? The Ravens are a very young team. What are you talking about?
I'm not trying to hear that crap about
Zay Flowers, rookie. Lamar's only 27. I mean, Gus Edwards is young. You got young guys on the squad. Likely is young. Come on, man.
Let me ask you something, Brother B. How many times have you seen this scenario? How many times have you seen it? How many times has the city of Baltimore been let down by these bum birds?
I believe we have. How many championship games? How many championships do we have?
Two.
Okay, so, and the franchise has been in existence for what? How long?
Since 96.
Okay, so not quite 30 years.
That is good.
Yeah,
that
that's
is
very
good. I'm going to give you that. But, Brother B, everything was right there. Now we got to look at the Swifties again.
I am pissed about that.
No one else. Please let the Ravens take out the Swifties.
I am pissed about that. Yeah, I'm not happy about that either.
Why to put it all out there on the Ravens, I don't know, because I thought they could get it done, and they didn't. But you know what? We're not going to talk about the Ravens. I'm laughing the loudest. They didn't make it to the big dance again.
Whatever,
and
man.
On the flip side of that, and I told you and the family, and I understood why no one responded back when I said, your bum birds lost. Let's watch a real number one seed win. Man, it wasn't pretty, but they got it done.
No, they shouldn't have won. And,
well, you know what?
They should not have won. I was so disappointed that the Lions collapsed like that, and the refs helped them a little bit, but I was so disappointed.
You know, I like those Lions, and I feel bad for the city of Detroit. I feel bad for the Lions, because I like those pesky Lions, and I call them the pesky Lions for a reason, because they did everything they had to do all season long to get to that position.
Yeah, they didn't lay down for anybody. And you said nobody's going to want to see him. Nobody wants to really play them.
I said that. And I was like, man, I'm going to be upset if the 49ers lose, but I'm not going to be mad. Well, I'll be disappointed if the 49ers lose. Let me change that. I would be disappointed, but I'm not going to be mad because I like those pesky Lions. They will be back. Yeah, I know their coach, Dan Campbell, said we might not never get back here again. I don't believe that.
I don't either.
They have something to build on.
Yeah, and
they really do.
He squeezes as much out of his team as he possibly. He squeezed a lot out of that team.
I'm going to tell you, I really like that team. I like what I saw out of them. Unfortunately, I think the moment was too big for them because they are a young team.
Right.
You know, and the 49ers, man, I don't know what was said in the locker room at halftime. But you can see that they did not panic. They stuck to their game plan. And They needed the defense to make a couple of stops on some big plays. And there were some questionable calls as far as the coaching of Dan Campbell, when this is how I feel. Yes, that was your MO. You went for it on fourth downs. They were one of the teams that went for it on fourth downs close to almost more than anyone else in the NFL.
Yeah, but you can't
That's
give
your
up
MO.
But you can't give up points when you go on.
You gotta put points on the board.
You can't.
And that's the only problem I had with them. I didn't have a problem with them going away from that's what they do, but I had a problem saying, hey, you got these guys on the rope. Now let's deliver the knockout punch, and they didn't do it.
Exactly. And it changed the whole complexion of the game.
Oh, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
So, I like I said, I feel for them because I like that team. I think they're a good team. I think they will be back. They're definitely a playoff team. You know what? This is the thing. And I'm glad it didn't happen. There was talk that Aaron Glenn possibly could be up for a head coaching job, but he didn't get one. So he'll be back, and he can kind of improve that defense. He can look back and say, hey, these are some things I need to improve on,
right,
and I'm going to improve. So that's a good thing for the Lions.
Right.
I like what they have. I haven't heard of anything about any free agents or anyone going anywhere. So I think they'll be back. I think they may possibly be back. Definitely not definitely playoffs and maybe the NFC Championship game again next season. So, with that being said, let's talk about the 49ers, who did not look good at all the first half. They did turn around. They've proven to be a team that is a number one seed. I don't know going into the Super Bowl if they can, play that style of football, because they did it with Green Bay. They had to come from behind, and they did it again this past Sunday. And I don't think you can go into the Super Bowl playing like that. Kansas City, and I'm going to call them the Chiefs right now, even though I feel like they're a bunch of Swifties. Kansas City is one of those type of teams where if they get you down, you're not coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm going to save my prediction for the moment, because some other things I got to look at. But and I really wasn't impressed with the Kansas City win. I think the Ravens gave them that game.
Oh, we definitely did.
It was right there for you. You know, you had two major turn. You had some turn. You really had three big turnovers.
Yeah.
You know, Lamar fumbling, Zay Flowers fumbling at the goal line, which he really did not have to do what he did, but he's a rookie.
Right.
And he'll learn. There was some, and then the interception in the end zone. There were some things that the Ravens did that really upset me, but I wasn't surprised because that's what they do. When the moment's too big, they make the mistakes that do not need to be made at that time. Zay Flowers with the unsportsmanlike conduct, for the taunting, that was a bad time for that.
It was a horrible time for that, because they were on the 9-yard line. It pushed them all the way back to what, the 20?
Exactly. And then they had to settle for, and they didn't even get the field goal then, I don't think.
Right.
But
right.
I was just really disturbed with how that game was played. Like I said, I'm not a big fan of the Ravens, but I was pulling for them to win. I had my money on them, and that's what bothers me more than anything.
What? You put money on the Ravens? Okay.
Because I'd rather see the Ravens in the Super Bowl than those Derns. Look, I'm tired of seeing Taylor Swift. I'm tired of hearing about the Swifties. I'm tired of hearing about Travis Kelce. I'm tired of hearing about Pat Mahomes. This was the time the Ravens had every... It may not come again for several years from
now. Oh, no, it's going to come again.
To be in this position.
No,
right? The position that they were in, brother, the Kansas City Chiefs have not looked good all season long. But they were winning, but they didn't look like the powerhouse that they had been.
No,
they did not look like the
because
team that should be in the Super Bowl.
Teams exposed their weaknesses, and I got to be honest with you. Our defense played lights out. If you can hold a team like Kansas City to 17 points, and I got to be honest, the reason that Kansas City scored at least seven of those 17, was because of a turnover. If we can,
exactly.
If we can hold them to 10 points and not turn the ball over, you should be able to win that all day long. Our offense did not run the ball. I don't know why.
I don't understand that either, because that's Baltimore's MO. Everyone is talking about it. They're like, why did you go away from the run?
Right.
What were you thinking about? That's your style of football. You are the number one rushing team in the NFL.
It makes no sense.
You decide not to run.
Today, makes no sense.
Out of all days?
Makes zero sense. Zero sense. I don't understand it at all.
It was back to, I guess we'll have to wait until the 2024 season. But those guys from the Golden Gate City, they made it to the big dance. They will be there. And I'm pretty sure you and everyone else will be rooting for the Chiefs. Now, I don't understand.
No.
That happened.
This will be one situation where I won't be rooting for the Chiefs, where I'll be rooting for the 49ers. I can't stand the Chiefs. Cannot stand Patrick Mahomes. Cannot stand Travis Kelce. And I damn sure can't stand the fact that Taylor Swift is in every single shot. I can't stand it. So no, I like Andy Reid, but he's the only reason that I have any love for that organization. But I can't stand the rest of the squad.
Well, word has it that Travis Kelce will propose to Taylor Swift if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. I am hoping, and I got my fingers crossed, my eyes crossed, my arms crossed, my toes crossed, and anything else I can cross, that the 49ers beat the Chiefs so that doesn't happen.
Yeah. I want the 49ers to win as well. Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing that I didn't understand about the 49ers in the first half. Why did they not get Deebo Samuels involved in the first half? Why did it take him a whole half of football to get him involved in the game?
Well, I think it was a thing with, he had a problem with his shoulder. Even though all the x-rays came back negative, they said there was a little soreness, a little tenderness there. And I think they were being cautious. But when it got to the point where it's like, look, it's either win or go home, they put it all out there. And you could see the difference of style of play that they had in the second half. But they were laying it all on the line.
Yeah, they got him in the game. He makes an incredible difference. I don't know what it is about him, but he makes more so, I think, than Christian McCaffrey. Deebo Samuels makes a big difference when he is not in the game.
It's a big difference because the defensive coordinator is figuring, okay, this is my game plan with him. Without him, I can go to something different, and I know going to something different can definitely stop them. But with him, I don't know if he's going to line up as a receiver. He's going to line up in the backfield. I don't know what Deebo's going to do. So it causes problems for the defensive coordinators. Whereas when he's not in there, McCaffrey's going to run the ball. It's just a matter of filling in the gaps, making good tackles. But when the Deebo's in the game, you don't know what he's going to do, where he's going to be playing. So it's a nightmare for defensive coordinators.
Yeah.
How do you game plan for Deebo? How do you game plan for the 49er offense with him being a part of it? Man, without him, you got a shot. With him, it's like, what are we going to do? So I think that's huge. Now, I'm telling you right now, Brother B, they cannot come out the way they've been coming out the last 2 weeks.
Oh, no, they won't.
I thought against Green Bay was a rusty thing, but it seemed like maybe they took the Lions lightly. I don't know what it was, but they didn't look good. And I'm hoping these next 2 weeks they can find a way to get it all together, because I'm looking for that 6th Lombardi Trophy to go to Santa Clara. I'm looking to see no more of the Swifties. I just don't want to hear them no more.
I don't either.
So we're going to talk about that again, because next week will be the big game. We're not going to talk about the Pro Bowl games, because the Pro Bowl is now farce.
Soft.
What it used to be. They're talking about the flag football. Come on, man. I remember the Pro Bowl used to be a good thing to watch. I can't watch that crap.
I can't either.
Now, there have been the two final spots have been filled for coaching jobs. I'm talking about Seattle and Commanders. Dan Quinn is going to Washington.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, because I just knew that he was going to go to Seattle. I he's got roots in Seattle. I figured he would go to Seattle. And I'm surprised to see that he will be the head coach of the Washington Commanders.
Yeah, it's going to be
interesting. McDonald is going to Seattle. How much is that going to impact the Ravens?
A lot.
So when I say the Ravens had everything they needed as far as this year, right now, we may see it. And there haven't been, anyone named as far as defensive coordinator, to the best of my knowledge, right now. But, when the defensive coordinator comes in, they want to change things up. They want to go with their schemes. They don't want to go with the same things that the prior defensive coordinator had. So we'll see how huge of an impact that will be on the Ravens moving forward next season.
Yeah. I heard that they're trying to get what's-his-face back. Wink Martindale.
And that would be a good move, because he's out there.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now.
Yeah.
That would probably be, with the talent that the Ravens have right now, he would be the perfect guy for that defense.
Yeah, but I don't know if they have the money that he wants.
Right now, look, Ozzie Newsome, if he has to, look, Wink, I'm still kind of with the organization, even though I'm not the general manager. But look, man, you need to come back. Somebody needs to get on the phone and call that man and get him back into Baltimore.
Yeah, I agree. Because he has a Ray Lewis type defense right now to work with, and I think he could do amazing things.
He did amazing things down in Baltimore when he was there. I watched him as he went to other teams, and it's almost like he did the same thing. And with that talent, because he likes to blitz a lot, that talent that they have right now, that's perfect for the type of defensive schemes he wants to run.
Right.
Someone needs to get on the phone and call Wink. Brother Pete, why don't you get on the phone and call him? Somebody needs to call him. Get him back into Baltimore. And don't think I'm tooting my horns for the Ravens. I'm just keeping it real, because that man would be a perfect fit at defensive coordinator for that team.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah, he definitely would be. I hope they do get him back, but they were talking about it.
And Riverboat Ron has been in talks with several teams as far as being a defensive coordinator. And I think that would be a good move for him, because he was a very good defensive coordinator. Now, he was an okay head coach, given the talent that he had. I think he was a very good defensive coordinator.
Yeah, that's where he needs to stay.
I think that's his best bet for him. It's a possibility he might land in Dallas now that Dan Quinn is gone. And finally, because I got more than enough time to talk about the O's and the UFL and basketball, but my final note is, Bill Belichick will not be coaching the upcoming season.
Yeah, he's
nobody
unemployed.
Nobody wants old man Bill. And the hoodie will be on the hanger in the closet for the 2024 season.
Yeah, he just wants too much, man. He wants too much power.
He does. And let me tell you something, Brother B. Bill Belichick is a coach, but as a general manager and in charge of player personnel and whatever else goes on in the front office, that's not his forte.
No, it's not.
You know, his thing is on the field, coaching men.
Right.
Building winning teams. And when you wear too many hats, sometimes something gets lost.
Yep.
And if you notice over the last several years, the Patriots have been on the downside. You know, he hasn't drafted well. They haven't gotten the players that he needed for them to win. And so he needs to just go back to, I'm going to coach.
Yeah.
That's it. And on that note, Brother B, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. There will be no football today.
Nah.
Wow, what a week on that day.
Crazy.
So I'm out of here. Love the show. Keep on doing what you're doing. Give the people of Baltimore the things that they want and they need. I'll talk to you next week with my Super Bowl prediction. I am out of here.
All right,
brother.
Peace, brother. Peace. Well, you know, I kind of expected that. You know, I knew he was going to blow me up on this call because he did it through text earlier in the week, actually the day that the Ravens lost. So I expected it. You know, his Niners winning. Okay, I actually hope that they do win the Super Bowl. I'm more than I hate the Niners, I hate the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, I just do. All right, so time is getting away from us, but well, there was one sports story that I did not cover with him that I meant to, but he was a childhood hero of mine, not because of how he played sports, but because of the role he played in Rocky, and that is Carl Weathers, Apollo Creed. He passed away this weekend at the age of 76. They said it was natural causes, and he died peacefully at home in his sleep. You know, when I was a kid and I saw Rocky for the first time, you could not tell me that he wasn't a professional boxer. You could not tell me that he was not actually a heavyweight champion. The way his body looked, the way he spoke, the way he carried himself in that role as Rocky, I honestly believe he should have gotten like a Best Supporting Actor and an Oscar for that. He was amazing as Apollo Creed. And the crazy part about that is he was actually a professional football player. He played in the CFL with Warren Moon. Then he came and played in the NFL with the Raiders as a linebacker. I mean, but quit football in the mid-70s to pursue acting, and he was amazing at it. In fact, the first time I saw Carl Weathers was not as Rocky. The first time I saw Carl Weathers was actually on Good Times. He was the jealous husband of a model that JJ was painting, that actually James had a crush on. So I just wanted to say, sometimes you choose a path in life, and you may be good at that. And make no mistake about it, Carl Weathers played in the NFL. He was on the highest level at what he can do as far as the sport goes. He was a linebacker for the Raiders, but in his spirit, he knew he was meant to do something else. And he did it very, very well. He was also in Predator. He was just in a lot of movies, and he made his presence felt in all of the movies every time he was on screen. So he will be missed. Carl Weathers, Apollo Creed, dead at the age of 76. Rest in peace. All right. Well, on that note, our time is up here today, and I want to thank you so much for joining me and giving me your hour. I want to thank the Petty, as always, for being here and supporting me, even though he's a pain in my ass sometimes. I love him. He's my brother, and I can't wait to hear what he has to say next week about the predictions between the 49ers and the Chiefs. Please join us for that. And, of course, I want to thank the legendary Dionne Warwick for sitting down and speaking with me today. That was so much fun and such an honor. And hopefully I'll get an opportunity to speak with her again at a later date. But if you missed any portion of today's show and that interview, or if you have someone that you want to share this show with, you can always go to my website at voiceswired.com. I have all of the shows there listed from newest to oldest. This show will be up on the website on Tuesday. They always go up on the websites Monday or Tuesday. And you can listen to all of them in their entirety. It doesn't cost you a dime. Just go on to voiceswired.com. Click on the Let's Talk tab and just listen to the shows and have fun, and I hope that you do. Also, and I say this every week because I mean it every week, I love to get you guys feedback. Please hit me on Instagram at @onwithbrianpettaway. I love to hear what you have to say. Tell me what you thought about Ms. Warwick. Tell me what you think about Black History Month, how you feel about it. Do we need it? Should we have it? I look forward to hearing what you have to say about that. But today is Sunday. Today is Sunday. There are no games. Like the Petty said, there are no NFL games today. So sit back, relax, do nothing today. Just relax and chill. Do nothing. Because as I say every week, the best thing about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. So tomorrow morning, wake up fresh, renewed, ready to conquer the world, ready to work hard, help others, and be inspiring, and leaving yourself open to be inspired. All right, people, listen, I've got to go. Enjoy your Sunday. I will see you next week right here, same time, 10 a.m., on 1500 Radio, Baltimore's authentic multimedia experience. Have a great Sunday, people. Peace.